Thanks a lot, John. So as John said, Paul, so most fair chunk of my year and Paul Fisher's year has been spent working on this issue, which the FSB tasked us to do earlier in, at the beginning of the year. We put out this final report, and this is the final report. There is no more further iterations after this, despite a little bit of confusion around that. We put out this final report 30th of September, so a couple of weeks ago, looking at FX fixes. So this, Paul and I had previously been part of a group looking at the IBORs, and then this sort of spun off directly from that. So what I want to do quickly is just go through the main recommendations we come up with in this report. One thing which is important to get out there, so we did this work without knowing any more than anyone else in this room, well, I assume anyone in this room knows, about anything which was going on, about any of the investigations into the various allegations around foreign exchange markets. So we did this in complete ignorance of that, beyond what we could read in the press. This was, you know, as I said, this was done without any inside knowledge about that. Basically, we looked at foreign exchange fixes, which, when it all boils down to it, is basically the London fix, and to some extent the ECB fix. And we've got some numbers in the paper which just show you the sort of volume which goes through the London fix relative to any other time of the day, which is extremely large. And the only other noticeable spike you see is actually around the ECB, fix. So when we're talking about benchmark reform, we're basically talking about reform of the London fix. Throughout this whole process, we had quite a lot of interaction with WM, who are the ones who calculate the fix, and who are extremely cooperative. And since we put out this report, and in fact, even I think before we put out the report, have said they're very happy to do whatever we recommend. So let me just, as I said, quickly run through the main areas of the main recommendations. So the first chunk of recommendations really are around the calculation of the fix itself. At the moment, as you're probably all aware, the fix is calculated for each currency pair over a one-minute window centred at 4 p.m. London time, so 30 seconds before, 30 seconds after. WM take a feed primarily from Reuters and EBS, but not both. So for US dollar, euro, they've got the feeds from both, but they actually only use the feeds from one most of the time in calculating the fix. They take 60 observations through that period, and then it's not every single trade through that period which is going through on Reuters, say. It's actually only the first in each second. It's either the first or the last in each second. They just take that. It has to meet a few criteria in terms of lying within bid ask. The net result of that is, for, say, the Aussie, over that 60-second interval, there's generally only about 30-odd observations that actually make it through to the final calculation, and then they take the median of that. So that's the way they do it. So our recommendations around the calculation were, one, widen the window. We asked for feedback from the market on that around the middle of the year. People came back with various suggestions. Cole's suggestion is 10 minutes because there's 10 times as much volume goes through that as the rest of the day, which is more science than was applied to this question than pretty much anyone else came up with. But the median response was basically 5. Everyone agreed that the window needed to be wider. There was a general presumption the window shouldn't be too wide. We didn't end up making a hard recommendation around that, but 5 is basically where the bulk of opinion was, or informed opinion was. There's no great science around that beyond it's a number bigger than 1 and it's round. What we have recommended is that WM set up a working group with the main participants in the fix to be able to resolve that question, They've also agreed to take more feeds in the calculation of the fix. So they've already got Reuters and they've already got EBS giving them feeds. So we sort of said, well, use them, which we did think, which they've agreed to do, as well as any other feeds, any other reputable feeds. So feeds which meet a minimum standard, which again they're going to determine in consultation with users of the fix. So, so that's the sort of recommendations and primary recommendations around the calculation for traded currencies. It's slightly more complicated for the non-trade currencies. The traded currencies are around about, off the top of my head, about 30-odd, I think, high 20s, low 30s. But most of the currencies most people in this room would be interested in. The non-trade currencies is a little more interesting. Paul Fisher went up and visited WM in Edinburgh and had a look at one of the non-traded currencies where the last recorded observation had happened 3 weeks prior, which means calculating a daily fix on that one is challenging. So they're a little more complicated. But so WM has agreed to do that, and I suspect they'll be moving on this pretty shortly. IOSCO, as a number of you may be aware, IOSCO, probably a bit over a year ago now, put out a bunch of recommendations for appropriate calculations of benchmarks. This is all benchmarks, not just FX benchmarks. And they IOSCO did a quick assessment of WM against those principles that they put out, and they've got some recommendations around that. And again, WM has basically agreed to do that. That's more around the governance and the like rather than anything which directly affects the market itself. So that's the sort of recommendations around the calculation and around WM. There was another set of recommendations around the sort of market infrastructure of the fix. Now, one thing we put out in our consultative version of this was the possibility of having some sort of global utility, effectively a matching utility for fix business. Just to put it out there and see what the reaction was, the more we thought about it, the more complicated its implementation would be for any number of reasons, including, and most particularly, how do you handle the net at the end of all of that. So we didn't go down that route, but there, as you are probably aware, there are a number of market initiatives already out along those lines. State Street's got their, I'll get it, TrueFX, TrueCross, I always keep on iterating between, TrueFX out there, that's one. Reuters and EBS themselves actually have one out there which is going down the line. So we basically said, that's great, we'd like to see more of those, and for the time being at least, leave it at that. Another recommendation we put out there is that banks, I'll use the term banks, but it's actually anyone who's executing fixed business, but banks, for a shorthand, should actually charge something for this business. As you're probably all aware, by and large, there is no charge, no spread put on fixed business. The banks generally say when the client order comes in, the client order says, I want this done at the fix. So you're offering to execute a deal at an unknown price for, notionally at least, for free, which is an interesting business model. So we have put out a recommendation that if banks comply with some other things I'll get to in a second, that charging for that business would probably make sense. We're well aware of the competitive environment and what that those sort of outcomes that engenders, but that's what we've put out. Whether that's a spread or a fixed fee, we're open to either of those possibilities. I suppose they're the two main areas around the sort of infrastructure of the fix itself. We have then a bunch of recommendations around behaviour, for want of a better term. A bunch of recommendations around appropriate information sharing, which is primarily an issue for the banks. We're well aware that most banks have already instituted policies over the last year or two along those lines. We put out a bunch of principles. As a number of you may be aware, the Global Foreign Exchange Committees are working on something similar in terms of delivering something on a coordinated body, as Keith will undoubtedly expound on in a minute. ACI already has that out there as well. And we acknowledge the ACI in the paper, as well as the work that the Global FX committees are doing, and they're all fairly much in the same space. The one issue which a number of you may be aware, as we've looked into the information sharing, the more you get into the details, the trickier it actually gets. And to some extent, we're more interested in putting some high-level principles down as to what is and is not appropriate. As I said, the more you get into the details, the more complicated the exercise became. So we didn't go down that route here. But we don't just focus on the banks. There are also some recommendations around asset managers in terms of doing appropriate due diligence in terms of the way their FX business is executed. One other thing we discovered, as most of you are probably aware, the bulk of the fixed business comes from asset managers who are tracking indices, in particular something like the MSCI. So anything which has got a cross-border element, so the global MSCI equity index or bond index, has got cross-border elements in there, or multi-country or currency elements in there. That's, you know, the rebalancing at a daily and particularly month-end basis, that's the bulk of the driver of fixing flows. We just got most corporates, not all, but most corporates stay away from the fix in terms of executing their business, particularly anyone with their own internal capacity. So it's really an issue. As best as we could determine, the bulk of it's coming through from the asset management industry, and particularly the passive asset index tracking side of things. One thing we discovered in talking to the index providers, and I'm not necessarily picking any of them here, when we asked them what they understood about the way the fix was calculated, there wasn't a lot of understanding around that. They said, well, there's this thing which is published, we use that. Without really understanding the calculation, we thought it probably wouldn't be a bad idea if they had some idea about what it was they were actually using. So we suggest that wouldn't be a bad thing. So really, as I said, the recommendations are really in three parts. One around WM, we're very confident that they're going to be implemented. WM's already said that. There's a second set of recommendations around the market infrastructure, both in terms of the way the fixed business is actually handled. Sorry, the one part which I failed to mention that, which is probably of most interest to everyone in this room. The other recommendation we made around that was that banks should separate their fixed from their flow business. A number of banks I'm familiar with have already done that, and in a couple of cases did that a little while ago, actually. And that's related to the information sharing aspect. If there is a trader who is executing the fixed business who's separate from the flow business, then that minimises the opportunity for that information sharing. We're well aware of what that implies in terms of the ability to match orders. It's not necessarily the optimal solution. You know, in an ideal world, it isn't necessarily what you would do. We're not operating in an ideal world here. So that recommendation is there. And I said the final set of recommendations are really around behaviour. Again, we're well aware that the market, by and large, has moved a long way, particularly on the banking side, in terms of implementing internal standards around that. And to some extent, what we're doing is putting something out there which will, you know, in 5 years' time, when possibly this is all being forgotten, I'm not 100% confident that will be the case. It may still be going on in 5 years. Various cases may still be going on at that time. But anyway, at some point in the future, where sort of the memory of what's happened over the last few years has been forgotten, there'll be something out there which sort of sets a floor on where things might go. So I said they're the main areas of recommendation. Let me finish there and hand over to John to take things from forward.
What do you think would work better? Do you think a spread in the traditional way or a fee-based incentive?
Okay, so you guys did, 3 months on this and you couldn't come up with an answer?
Nine.
9 months, okay. Personally, I think probably a fee is going to be better because I think you can, you know, the asset managers can then pass the fees on. The problem, if you suddenly start imposing spreads on them, they will get a bit antsy about it. Having said that, active managers are happy to pay spreads. So probably make it a choice for that customer. But I would say, in principle, the fees will be easier to explain further down the line, which is where ultimately we have got to explain this.
I mean, I would broadly agree with that, and I think one thing which is interesting, we have to be careful using the word agency, because that apparently has particular meanings in the US context. So I'm using agency with a small a, I think.
Yeah.
But that's a fee-based model is effectively, that's what it is, which is obviously different from where the market has been. But again, for similar reasons, I think that may work. I mean, one thing which I thought was interesting in doing this work is that, was this issue of tracking error. And asset managers were comfortable enough in taking tracking error on the component portfolios. When it came to FX, suddenly tracking error was a no-no.
Which is sort of interesting. Yeah, and it's a nonsense, because if you think of it this way, you've got these asset managers taking positions in Korea, Singapore, Tokyo, Australia, and they're letting the market go for 12 hours before 4 p.m. London, before executing the FX. What about the tracking error in that 12 hours between you doing the underlying trade, guys, and the actual fix? Active asset managers, as your report noted, generally take that into account and execute closer to the time of the underlying trade. The other point I would probably point out as well is that, as the report notes, it's in their index trackers. So typically, I would argue that the amount of netting available, if they're all tracking index, is going to be fairly minimal. Mm. So you're still going to have the same issue with the residue.
Yeah. One thing we had to be careful was that you have to be careful saying it's not all the asset manager's fault.
Yes.
We're particularly sitting in a room full of FX traders.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the comments or the recommendation on separating the flow business from the fixed business. How in reality will that work? Does that involve more use of electronic netting machines to do it and take the human element out of it, or how do you see that transpiring?
I mean, that's roughly the State Street model, is that.
Right.
Is what you just, not roughly, that is the State Street model, what you just described. But there are others who I know, I mean, it's literally sticking over, I mean, almost literally as well as figuratively, a cone of silence around a trader so you cut off the fixing orders at a particular point, someone goes and then is sitting in another room who receives those orders, they then execute it through the fixed window completely separate from the sort of spot trader sitting there on the desk. I know at least one bank who's gone down that route. Well aware that this implies cost, either if you're going down the algo route or if you're going down, amongst other things, if you're going down the separation route, it requires two traders, which is more than some dealing rooms have at the moment, or two humans at least. But as I said, it's in coming to Cole's point about the net. It's not necessarily the optimal thing in terms of execution, but it's really a function of the circumstances to where the market got, not necessarily something you'd ideally dial up.
Traders are still going to be left with residue balances, particularly month and quarter end. They're going to be large, and they are going to take a bit of a kick in on that. But if you at least make it a bit fairer by at least saying, well, there's a fee-based business around this. And I guess the other thing is for the trader as well is if you put them in that cone, in that separate room, you can then separate that business from their normal day-to-day activity.
Yeah.
So then you don't have this fear of, I'm losing money on this trade. This is going to come against my bottom line, which is a fear that drives a lot of people. Everyone's got families. They want to earn a living. I think the experience that I've been told of with moving people in different rooms isn't working. And I think the answer to your question is, yes, it lies in the algos. Because, I mean, ultimately, what are we doing here? We're automating. The recommendations say industry netting utilities. Let EBS and Reuters, let Trucross have a go at it. They're basically automating what the voice broking desk used to do, as Keith and John know very well.
Yeah.
So if you're automating that, automate the balance. My question is, what happens with the algos? Are they allowed to interrogate internal bank liquidity? Because you're going to lose a massive amount of efficiency.
I was going to say, algos can game probably more efficiently than traders. So,
I think we need to randomize the process. The observations over the 5-minute window, They can't be the last second, the last, you know, might 10 milliseconds of every second. It's got to be randomised so that you can't, so the algos aren't going to game this, because there are clever guys out there, and they will work it out.
But that's the sort of interaction when WM sets up this group to determine that. They're the sort of issues one I would expect that they would be looking at.
You'd hope so, yeah. And I think also one of the points you made there about venues needing to fulfil criteria, please God let it be that they have to have no last look.
Yes, I expected you to say that.
Because ultimately it's going to be gamed.
Yeah.
You know, if I know there's a fix going on, I can just stick in any price I like on last look and I don't have to deal on it. Yeah, there's the next level.
The line in the model code is it's to be discouraged, and then
I understand,
excuses for it.
Yeah, there are needs in certain areas for last look, apparently.
Yeah.
And I understand certain relationships will probably require that. I don't believe the traditional asset manager corporate bank relationship requires it.
Mm. Agreed.
Yeah. Keith, curious also too, obviously, you know, this is focusing on, you know, the fixed foreign, the fixes and the benchmarking. In the code of behavior, how clearly how do you define front running, and how clear do you go into those definitions? I mean, it's a very difficult, you know, having been a trader myself, you know, where you draw the lines on those is extremely difficult. How far has the ACI gone in describing
or defining
it?
Well, I think, they don't go particularly specific, but it's behaviour that's not encouraged and should be stamped on by the superiors. So we're hoping that the model code gets read by the chief dealers as well as the traders. But it's very general.
And above,
yeah. Mm. But it's very general in the way that it tries to discourage front running. It doesn't give specific examples. It just says, it shouldn't be encouraged and should be monitored by the bank's own people.
But as you say, I mean, and as I said earlier, once you try and get specific, it gets, you know, you can say the word front running and say, okay, that's not good. But as I think Cole basically said, front running and hedging are observationally equivalent, even looking at the trades which go through. So,
once you get specific, someone will try and find a way around it that is it wasn't in the model code, so this isn't particularly front running, but it's a form of someone will find a way around.
If you get specific, the model code will be about the size of War and Peace. Yeah. do you think that we need to have more teeth around these? I mean, the FX committees, I mean, I know you're involved in that work to unify the codes of conduct, but do we actually need to give these codes teeth in some form? Maybe not legal, but, you know, just.
So, I mean, that's, again, something the ACI has strong, you know, so the question, I mean, as, you know, banks have internal codes of conduct to which they get their traders to sign up to. The question is, can you have this sit alongside that or be part of that process? I mean, that said, in most jurisdictions, sort of illegal trading behaviour is indeed illegal. Some of this is around defining, providing a little more detail around that, but only sort of, as I said, reasonably high-level principles.
But it's a global business. We need a global code, really, that everybody signs up to, and that's what ACI are aiming for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in as everyone, most people in this room are aware, you know, we the Australian Foreign Exchange Committee endorse the ACI code. That's true of a couple of other foreign exchange committees around the world, but clearly not true of all of them. But.
Mm.
Do you think that, you know, when you talk about incentive, do you think it's important for the banks to incentivize their traders not just to sort of try and make money on every deal and in terms of curbing behavior, or was that too difficult to do?
Well, as best as I can understand, and again, from only reading in the press, that and without picking on one institution or highlighting one institution, you know, Deutsche has sort of gone down that route. I'm not saying that no one else has either, but they've most publicly, at least, or at least been given the most coverage around the sort of stuff they've done around behaviour. And again, coming to some of the stuff which is in there, is in some cases it's about providing at least providing information about what isn't appropriate. As you said, you know, if people want to get around it, they will get around it. That's always going to be the case. But in some cases, at least giving people some guidance as to what is and is not appropriate information.
Sharing of information is the big one.
I mean, in an over-the-counter market, though, defining what is and is not an appropriate amount or what to share is actually, you know, can get difficult. I mean, one thing which was, you know, is fairly straightforward is you probably don't need to pass on which customer you're acting on behalf of, right? That's not necessary to complete the trade generally. So that's fairly straightforward. Too much further than that, and then it starts to get tricky quite quickly. So, you know, I mean, a lot of banks have obviously been going through this compliance process over the last few years, or last year or two at least, and, you know, in setting up internal training and whatever, and these sort of issues become very tricky very quickly, as I think most people in this room probably discovered.
What's the difficulty in coordinating this globally? There's different laws in different countries, and as Guy mentioned before, there's different groups working on similar type of things, and it's not, I guess, purposely not coordinated at this stage. What's the difficulty there, and what's the time frame, do you think, Guy?
Well, I mean, we are trying to coordinate it across the global foreign exchange committees at the moment, and, you know, this is at the meeting this year. Yeah, it was this year in Sydney in April, and we, you know, and that's put that out in the public domain. That was something we're actually trying to work on, I think, basically in time for the next meeting of the global FXCs early, not too far into next year. And that process is underway to at least get a bit of global coordination around this. What the final form of that will take, we'll have to, you know, is still in train, although the train's actually moving reasonably, I'd have to say, is moving pretty well. But at least that provides some, you know, it may be, again, fairly high level, but some high level commonality of at least of some principles across the major FX centres. Most of you are probably aware, the UK has the Fair Markets Review underway at the moment. I mean, so that process, you know, that process will probably come up with something right, not just for the FX market, but for a much wider set of market segments, which may provide something which others can have a look at as well.
Do you think this, are we going down the road? This was brought up to me last week by someone. I didn't have an answer for this. I'll open this up. I mean, will foreign exchange go towards some sort of central exchange? I mean, because it is a big 24-hour market. You've got four or five markets operating at the same time, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, is that where the train is heading?
I don't know. I think one concern I have was whether, yeah, I mean, the FX market has moved in the direction of, it was one of your favourite themes, the FX market has moved in the direction of the equity market over the last number of years. What I don't think would be useful would be to see it move even more in the direction of, say, the US equity market. One thing which has been mildly helpful to that cause was the publication of Mr. Lewis's book earlier this year, which highlighted some of the, you know, things, you know, why you might want not to go down that route. So I think some of that pressure may have backed off a bit. I mean, I still think it's difficult to see where exactly the market evolves to, but I think the pressure on it to become another version of the equity market is abated a little bit. I suppose, I mean, the other thing, which I think we're pretty sure we said it in the final version of the report, and certainly there at some point, you know, one thing which is we've always got to get across to people who is that, you know, executing large trades is difficult regardless of market structure, which I'm sure everyone in this room is familiar with. There is no, you know, ever since people started talking to each other under a tree in London, that's been a problem, and no one has yet come up with a solution to that.
With the segregation of orders, are you just looking at the London 4 p.m. benchmark or all benchmarks? Because most of the day they're, in, you know, it's not much.
Yeah, I mean, we're actually We basically say it around all benchmarks, but I mean in terms of materiality, it's the London fix, really. But I mean, and as I said earlier, it's really around information flow. I mean, I said one thing which is interesting as we looked across the world is that, you know, you just don't see anything like London in any, pretty much in any currency pair at any other time. In terms of orders of magnitude, it's materially different. So at least, I mean, you know, the focus of the report was basically on London 4pm, but in terms of elsewhere, then it really comes down to, you know, it's what, you know, comes down to the, it's more about the information sharing as much as anything and what's appropriate and what's not.
Because the problem comes if you do have it around every fix, you've got dealers popping out of your room or going into their cones,
yeah,
you know, on the half hour. I mean, these guys are meant to be trying to track the market and give some, get a feel for it. That, yeah, makes it a lot harder. So, again, I guess that ends up with maybe the agency.
But without wishing to plug anyone's model, but only because it's out there. But State Street does allow, if you read what they've got, it's actually, they've got that there for every fix. It's actually not there just for London 4pm. Just as an example of what is potentially possible.
And if this stuff is going to go to an algo, then ultimately they can be deployed at any,
yeah,
time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's an argument out there that says that, you know, why 4pm? Because actually Europe has gone home. London typically is handed over to New York. There's much more liquidity available at 3pm London time, because then you've got New York, London and Europe in full swing.
So we got an answer to that question, which is, and it's a function of existing work practices, but everyone in the general vicinity, yeah, of London quite liked the idea of just gradually accumulating the orders through the day, and then sometime around mid-afternoon you'd sort of collect them all up and then hand them off to the, you know, to your bank somewhere, you know, around about 3 o'clock was just sort of a nice time in the afternoon to be to doing that in terms of the working day. You know, had no relevance whatsoever to,
yeah,
here, for instance.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's sort of...
I think one of the big challenges, though, is going to be, do we need to actually investigate practices at the other side more? Do we actually need to get these asset owners to accept that their managers have to change some of their practices? Because, you know, you're talking about a fairly conservative, you know, segment of the industry. So, yeah, maybe the question we should be asking is, where do they need to change?
Yeah, I mean, and the interesting question, so then you get into the world of mandates and trustees, and which is,
yeah,
you know.
Educating those guys, yeah.
No, but it's also, yeah, pretty slow moving.
Yeah. But then we have to. But you have to start the movement somewhere.
Yeah. No, that doesn't mean you don't start. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So if it takes us years, it takes us years. But I think at least if you can turn around now and say, look, guys, this is palpably not best execution. This is palpably not fair. And we're now going to charge you this. That's fine. That may solve the problem. And they may turn around and say, we're fine.
Yeah. But that's why I think price is always a good behavioural changer.
Thank you. How would you summarise the thoughts and views from the buy side as you conducted your interviews and discussions to events as how they've unfolded and their reaction to the suitability of the current situation?
To be honest, I'm not sure. In our conversations, I don't think the buy side went overly... I mean, you know, again, no one knew anything, knows exactly what,
yeah,
the allegations were, but the buy side went overly... They were, coming back to something Cole said earlier, what they were happy with was getting dealt at the rate against which they were being benchmarked. The indexes were using. So zero tracking error against whatever that, what the FX rate actually happened to be, by and large, they weren't that fussed about that. As long as the rate that they were getting dealt at was that rate, whatever that happened to be. And so... I mean, I'm sure there won't be necessarily overjoyed to be a recommendation that you might actually have to pay for this, given it's been free. But there wasn't they were brought, as well, haven't had any direct pushback against it, let me put it that way.
So what, one could be mischievous and say it's a strange situation when the customer themselves are quite happy with the situation.
Oh, definitely. Oh, my experience talking to asset managers, they were perfectly happy with the conversation because zero tracking error means one less conversation they have to have with the end client.
Well, zero tracking error for free too.
Yeah, exactly. So, so they're perfectly happy. Having said that, a lot of asset managers that I speak to also do acknowledge that this is not best execution and that they could actually execute the business better away from the 4pm fix.
I mean, I would have to say, I mean, there was no uniformity in terms of the conversation with asset managers. There are some who have extremely detailed knowledge about the way their business is executed. That wasn't, by the way, necessarily correlated with size either. And some had made a conscious decision not to execute at the fix and were very much interested in BEX execution. So the, I think that and that's changed.
Yep.
I think and is still changing.
I'm looking at more the index providers, and one of the things I've often wondered is why the index providers like MSCI and the like don't split up the fixes onto the regional closes. So on the end of the Japanese equity market, you benchmark there for your yen, similar for Europe, similar for UK, similar for US. So yeah, at least you're diluting the concentration around the 4pm, and you're also covering your risk in a lot more time-efficient manner. Is that something that the index providers, until the index providers change, then a lot of managers are just going to continuously their benchmark to it. There's no upside in taking any risk against it. It's something that, if you have any response that.
Yeah, no, so we asked that question of a number of them. And one thing they made very clear is if there's demand for it, they will provide it. I mean, they're in the business of providing what people demand. I mean, that's a bit of a chicken and egg problem here, of course. But, the index providers made it very clear that if people want something along the lines you were talking about, they're quite happy to provide it. I mean, that's more business for them. So not surprisingly, they're happy enough to do that. I mean, one thing was interesting, it's a bit like LIBOR in the sense of where it started is not where it has ended up in terms of use. I mean, those global indices were primarily there as a valuation metric, right? So I need something to provide, and then valuation turned into performance measurement, right? So but the original incarnation was, you've got a cross-border portfolio, I have to have some way of just, marking that to market for want of anything else, or, a valuation metric. I will just, here's a foreign exchange valuation metric out there, it's the London 4pm, I'll just take that. And then, so that was its origin, and then it moved to a point where actually I want to, so it didn't have to, valuation and execution don't have to be the same thing, that just happens to be the way the market evolved. And coming to Cole's point, there's no necessarily reason why that state of affairs, and to your point, why that state of affairs necessarily has to.
Just interested whether any of the panel members were surprised by the strong feedback you've had in terms of moving from the one-minute window to 5 minutes. Is there anyone that's got any strong opinion in terms of, I guess that's a halfway house, but the move from 1 minute to 5 minutes? Is there any alternative views from the panel?
Well, you like 10.
My very scientific method. I believe that a longer window is a much better solution because we can at least smooth activity within that time. It also allows other participants to maybe put their interest into the market in a longer window. Within 1 minute, so much happens and it becomes a frenzy. Whereas for the other 23 hours and 59 minutes of the Australia Open, things can get a bit lively. But to my mind, you're smoothing the volume into the market and you're attracting more volume to the market there as well. I also think, as a related point, that the calculation, whilst I agree with Guy that it's fine in principle, I believe there should be a VWAP element to it, whereby we actually put volume into this calculation. There are plenty of algos and plenty of calculations out there that have a VWAP-TWAP combination. We can use that in conjunction with a longer window, which should then hopefully smooth access to liquidity. And yeah, if I'm a corporate, or if I'm a hedge fund, and I've got natural business to do, if I've got a 5 or 10 minute window, I'll stick it in there. Particularly if I think I'm counter trend to the index followers.
And also, I mean, it's still going to be the most liquid time of the day.
Yeah.
And you're potentially just spreading that liquidity, out. I mean, the market dynamics will probably change. We're aware of that. We had a lot of discussion within the group about VWAP and TWAP, and different members of the group have different views on the merits of that. And I'm pretty sure it's still in there. We have an appendix at the back which discusses that a bit. I think it's potentially something again that WM may well discuss with their user group.
The residue is going to be executed according to a VWAP, not a TWAP. So therefore, I think you can maybe bring it into the calculation. Would be my point on that.
Yeah.